courtside of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast, episode number 366. I'm Andrew, with you as always. I'm Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. My co-host is Derek. You know him in the forum as Deepa3, and he is Deepa384 on Twitter.
No, I'm happy to be here again. I did want to start off the show, though, by asking if you had ended up... I brought this up a couple episodes ago. Did you end up getting Garfield cart?
I haven't bought it yet. I was looking at which one to get. There's also a pack going at the moment, the Lasagna pack, appropriately enough, that has the first game and the second game in it. So I was tossing up whether to get the Lasagna pack or just get the first one, because I think you've got the first one.
I think I have the first one as well. The first cup is called the Lasagna Cup.
Of course.
That's the one that you're fitting. But, yeah, I can't wait for you to try that game so you can... It's just the biggest Mario Kart knockoff. I can't even get over it. It plays just basically exactly like the old Mario Kart games. It's funny.
Did you ever play Scunny Kart or Wacky Wheels for the PC back in the day, back in the 90s?
No, I didn't.
Also, major Mario Kart ripoffs for the PC.
Yeah, there was this game, I brought it up on another podcast. There was this game for Jaguar 64-bit. It was a kart racing game, and I can't think of the name of it. I'll try to remember it. But it's also quite the Mario Kart knockoff. Not even as much, though, as Garfield. This is just the item system and everything. It just still blows my mind, so... If I'll check the version that I have and I'll get back to you to make sure that you get the right Garfield cart. Yes, folks, there's two Garfield carts.
you don't want to get the wrong one. It's,
yeah. I mean, how can you go wrong? The reviews on them are hilarious.
I was looking at some of the reviews on both, and you're right, just talking about how it's this game saved my life. This game is tells us the meaning of life. People, Garfield is life. We thought Shrek was life, but you know,
Garfield. I fell into it deep. I was in a deep depression, and this is the game that pulled me out. Like stuff like that.
That's selling it pretty hard. So I mean, how can I go wrong with either game or indeed both? So I will pick it up because I do want to check it out. It looks hilarious again in these knockoff games. I mean, we've talked about knockoff NBA Jam clones back in the day. They also had the, you know, obviously Mario Kart clones and Doom clones, and just when somebody finds success in a genre, you can bet that there's going to be some clones popping up pretty soon afterwards.
No, think about all the side scrollers that tried to, yeah, like you said, you know, copy Mario and whatnot, and then all the Tetris knockoffs too. Mm. I will say this though, I was playing Dr. Mario the other night, and my brother was watching, and what a blast it was playing Dr. Mario. That game is so difficult. When you get up to like a level around like level 15 or level 16, and the game is just so well made, and the music picks up, it, you know, when the blocks pick up, etc. It's just, when the pills pick up, because you're fighting viruses. That's the whole point of Dr. Mario. But yeah, that's a great Tetris type game.
You know, I have played it, but I never actually owned that one. It was one of those games that I kind of looked at in the shop. Or at the video store, but never actually played until many years later.
Yeah, you have to think fast. I love games where you have to think fast, and like you can't have distractions. Like you can't be looking at your phone or talking to somebody or anything like that. You have to be completely immersed in each level the entire time, and those are great games.
Indeed, and there are some very difficult ones back in the day. Speaking of focus, I actually released a couple of Xbox 360 rosters for NBA Labo 6. Did you see those come out, Derek?
I didn't see them come out. I saw that you were working on them. I know that you've been working on them for March Madness.
Yep, they came out. That is the end-of-season roster for 2006 season, for the Xbox 360 version of it, and also the just a couple of 98 teams, which I talked about before, the Lakers and the Bulls. Just put them out there just in case anybody wants to have a look. If you do check them out, please let me know how you get on with the rehashing and re-signing of the files. That is something you need to do when you share Xbox 360 saves. Bit annoying compared to PC saves, but it is what it is. Just wanted to throw them out there. But the 98 teams roster, Derek, inspired me to actually have a try at creating an expanded minimalist retro roster for 06 360. Basically a classic teams roster using only the players in the game and the 50 creative player slots. Now, you are very limited when you do that. You do have to leave some players off the teams. So basically, I chose if a player wasn't very prominent on one team, it wasn't another. I just put them on the team they were most prominent on, so that every team had 8 players. Used up the 50 creative player slots. It was actually came together quite well, and I was all ready to just polish it up, do the ratings, do the faces, because I just created all the players with basic bio data ready to go. I thought, fantastic. So then I'm reordering the rosters to then further edit them later, and I notice that Erik Strickland is starting for the Celtics. Now, the games, as you know, when you make trades and signings and everything, automatically reorder the rosters each time you do. So I thought that's a bit strange that they've put Erik Strickland at center, because normally they might put him in the starting lineup because of his overall rating, but certainly not out of position. So then I see that everyone's kind of out of position in the starting lineup, and I think that's a bit weird. So I fix it, and I go and I go into edit player, and I make a couple more changes. Then I come back to the roster, the Celtics roster, and now there are two Erik Stricklands on the roster. Vitaly Potapenko is gone, replaced by a second Erik Strickland. And I try releasing him, and both Erik Stricklands are now combined, and they go together into the free agent pool. And I realize that a day's work has been corrupted and auto-saved thanks to some weird glitch in the roster. So basically,
Boy,
I.
would that. I hate stuff like that. First
Yeah.
off, one Erik Strickland was enough. But that's wild. Yeah, I hate stuff like that. I had stuff like that happen when I was modding NBA 2K14. Just completely destroyed my roster.
So
It just.
I ended up deleting it. I ended up, and I probably should have kept it just for the sake of getting some screenshots, but here's the thing. If it was on PC, I could salvage the data, copy it from DBF to DBF, etc. Or even if it was 2K, you can copy, if you, as long as the file can be read by Redditor or RedMC, you can copy that data over on PC. Can't do it on 360, so I just scrapped it and decided, yeah, I'm going to wash my hands of this. It also occurred to me, you know what, this is kind of a blessing in disguise that I didn't go any further with it, obviously, especially with it being glitched. But I mean, it was one of those things that I made on a whim. It was a day's work, so it wasn't nothing, but it wasn't like too much work at the same time. And especially having not gone through and made all the faces yet and sculpted all the faces, but it was certainly frustrating. But it also reminded me, you know, it's so important. And I will talk about this in the upcoming Monday tip-off this week. Is that you do have to pick your modding projects wisely, and that was going to be a lot of work. Even just for a couple of days' work, as it probably would have ended up being, for a very niche modding project, compared to even if you go back and edit something for Live06 PC, you're probably going to find more people in our community that are going to check it out and dust that off. So, in a way, it kind of reminded me that look, I need to get back to these other projects that I've been wanting to finish for a long time. But there's just something about that lure of the new project, Derek, and maybe you felt this too, that when it's at the beginning of the project, when you can just make swift, big progress of moving players around and everything, and it's fresh and new and exciting, that you haven't got to the tedious parts of the project yet. Unfortunately, there's something very, very tempting about starting that new project and neglecting what's already on the workbench.
Yeah, so there's a few comments I want to make about this. First off, Vitaly Potapenko was a way better option at center than Erik Strickland.
Yeah.
Let's be honest there. So that's,
I'll
I
grant you
mean,
that.
the way that you could have fixed that if the game allowed you to was then in turn if you wanted to keep your progress because you're on console is make a create use one of those created player spots to create Vitaly Potapenko and somehow make Erik Strickland a free agent or make him the other Erik Strickland a free agent or get rid of him at the end of the roster. Like just make him like inactive or something like that. Like that would have been like a console type fix
The problem is that
for that.
the two of them were stuck together, basically. It was, I think somehow Potemko got corrupted and was using, had his values, so it had two copies of Strickland that had like, oh, he's a free agent, so we've got two of them in the free agent. So when I moved one, the other one went as well. So it was really, I foresaw more glitches happening, so that's why I basically washed my hands of the roster.
Well, I want to say that I also did something similar, and that roster is actually still something that's just kind of sitting there right now for me. And I did this actually on NBA 2K14 for Xbox One, and I don't have created players. But what I started to do was put together, using players in the roster, some classic teams that were in the recent past, and I was actually becoming pretty successful. I put in the 08-09 Lakers. in the console NBA 2K14, and you have Fisher, you have Trevor Ariza, you have Pau Gasol, Andrew Bynum is in that game. You have all of those guys, a good portion of that 08-09 Lakers roster still in NBA 2K14. So those players, I put them on the team. I did the same with the Celtics. I put together like the 07-08 team, as many players as I could for that team. So those roster projects are kind of fun to see what you can do. Like, it's like a puzzle,
Oh, definitely,
like
yeah.
putting players together. And it was really fun to put them on the court. The problem is that when you put them on the court, the court oftentimes is wrong. Sometimes the jerseys are wrong, et cetera. So it kind of ruins the immersion. But yeah, it definitely is kind of fun to do that. I like rosters like on console when, as opposed to classic teams, if you have a, I'd rather do a fantasy draft, let's put it that way, where it doesn't really matter as much if players are in the wrong uniforms or on wrong courts and stuff like that, because it's just the league completely mixed up and you're playing with the best players of all time. And it's like, hey, we're playing on these courts and with these jerseys, and it's not like hurting accuracy or
Oh,
anything.
for sure. Yeah,
So,
it's one of those things where you
yeah.
have to, if you are going to make a project like I was mulling and got halfway through before the Eric Strickland glitched everything on me. To this point, his biggest glitch was putting his jersey on backwards. At this point, back in the day in his rookie season, his name is Dallas, and he plays for Strickland was the call. Yeah, you really have to ignore some of those issues if you're making those kinds of projects for consoles, or like you say. Lean into it as you suggested, and have a fantasy situation where you can say, "Oh, well, this is just the aesthetic we're going with." But I'm glad you brought that
Yeah.
up because I was going to ask, having had this modding disaster of mine and having this kind of epiphany or remembering the this is why you have to be judicious about picking modding projects and working on the right thing. And yes, I'll be going back to some PC stuff now for the rest of what I'll be doing for March Madness. But I was going to ask if you'd ever had any kind of modding disasters like that, where you've just put a lot of work in and then something's just been lost like that. Because I've had a few, but that's my most recent one, and it sucks to lose a day's work.
I had one that scared the hell out of me. But first, I wanted to point out today I learned that Mark Ivarone, for those who aren't aware, he was on the 82-83 76ers championship team. I learned today that for an entire half of basketball, he wore his shorts on backwards. And it was pointed out to him at halftime
Uncomfortable.
and switched him around. That's uncomfortable. So there's your fun fact for the day, your NBA history fun fact. So NBA 2K14 for the PC, I had done a ton of work. Editing the UBR base, faces that I wanted in there, et cetera, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I verified the game cache. This is in my infancy of modding NBA 2K14 PC. And when I verified the game cache, I didn't realize that it removed the files that were in the folder that were not supposed to be in there, like all the ARC files. And what ended up happening was I lost it, basically. Like, I booted up the game and I went into a season that my brother and I were in, and all the logos were wrong and the jerseys were wrong and faces were missing and stuff like that. And I had a panic attack. I'm like, all this work, is this season ruined all of this stuff? So basically I had to spend a couple days getting the faces back, doing the edits, putting the base UBR back in. Trying to, get it back to the way it was. And I ended up getting it back basically to the way I had it, but it took a long time and it was a lot of wasted hours
That's
that
brutal.
I shouldn't have had
No.
to do. Yeah, so just be careful when you're verifying integrity of game caches on Steam, because it's not always pretty. I did want to point out too, though, you're talking about created players in NBA Live 06, and it's cool that you have those 50 spots. It's not a lot, but at least you have something. But at least you can customize the players. Last night, I went into NBA Live 19, and I'm on PS4 because I was playing MLB The Show, and I was like, hey, you know what? I don't have to put the disc in for Live 19. I have it digitally. I threw on it Live 19. Was like, I'm going to test out the created player again because it'd been a while since I looked at it. You have no editing options. It's all preset faces. Every single play, it's just, there's no, you can't edit eyes, you can't do, the only thing you can do is add hair and facial hair, but otherwise you're stuck with the exact face that they pre-made, and it's just a killer. Like, I this is another design decision that makes absolutely no sense to me. You really expect people to use a create a player speaker a feature when all it is preset faces?
Yeah, even if you're using it for the one player, like, obviously they expect you to scan your face in for the one player, but if you don't have a compatible phone or you can't get it to work or you simply don't feel like it, you want to be able to customize that face, but all you've got is presets. And of course, the same presets for caps as well, for roster editing. So it really is very limiting, especially in 2018 when that came out.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, you can't make any retro rosters with that. You can't, like, make Jordan or try to put Vince Carter on a team or make T-Mac or anything like that. I mean, they don't look anything. They're just a bunch of preset faces. Mm. Now, one good thing is they gave you about 153 spots, I want to say, for created players. So you can use those slots. But how many if you can't, there's, like, 50 presets or, like, 30 to 50 presets or something like that in there. What are you going to have? If you have 153 spots, you're going to have a ton of guys that look exactly alike.
Absolutely, yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. So I was a little frustrated with that. And then I'm playing the game, and I'm like, this game is so smooth, and there was such an opportunity missed. But they had the bones there for Live 20, and I know I've said it on so many podcasts. You guys are probably sick of it, but it's just frustrating playing it and seeing that. If they had just made it so the game was more fun to play, more reactive on the sticks, less canned animations, wider crossovers, you know, more better separation moves, more realistic separation moves and stuff like that, that game would have shined even more, and they would have even had, you know, a stronger base to go into for Live 20. But anyway, Live 19 was frustrating. Yeah. But yeah, you asked me too about mods, like the excitement of starting a new mod. I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me. And it keeps getting me sidetracked. It's the same reason why I haven't finished my NBA 2K16 roster. My Ultimate Classic Teams roster for that game is because, you know, something happens where NBA 2K21 comes out and I start creating faces for like Rasheed Wallace and Reggie Miller and Charles Barkley, or NBA 2K20 came out and then there were mods that I wanted to try and I wanted to try faces. So I ended up getting sidetracked and started creating faces for NBA 2K20 and downloading those mods and putting them into the game. The 2K19 retro rosters, I started trying to make faces and do conversions for that roster, and that sidetracked me from my NBA 2K16 project. So when you love modding and you have so many of these games and there's so many different tools and new opportunities that come up, it's so easy to get sidetracked.
That spark of inspiration, that new idea for a roster mod or something to do, or you pick up a new skill, and like, oh, I can make faces now, or I can make logos or jerseys, and then you just want to give that a go, and all the things that are on the workbench already just get pushed to the side, and you want to finish them, but this is exciting, brand new, shiny idea that you can put. You're at the tedious point of this project, but this project, you're at the fun part. So it really is so easy to get sidetracked that way.
Yeah, that happened to me on 2K17 too. The fun part was like getting all the faces in there, right? And like that roster came together, and it's like, oh, look, the art, the jerseys are there. Look, we have the court in there now, and oh, I was able to make a stadium. And then you get to the attributes, and you get to the tendencies.
There's a lot of them, yeah.
And you're like, all right, so if I buckle down today, this is going to take me about like 7 hours to finish this team. Just on this stuff, do I really want to be messing with these formulas and doing this all day? So yeah, that's also part of the delay sometimes with roster releases.
That's my 2K11 rosters in a nutshell. But I'm working through it. I want to get it done. And now that I've realized that maybe a classic team's roster for Live 06 on 360 isn't the priority that I was trying to make it, maybe I can get that done this month. So we'll see. I did want to mention, because you brought up Live 20, and we'll always circle back to what NBA Live should have done and what it should do in the future. That's going to be a recurring topic. But we had some very nice compliments on that last week's show, episode 365, of course, on our Facebook page. We want to thank you and acknowledge you. Daryl mentioned that after hearing the ideas that the past few episodes, he said, if you ask me, Andrew and Derek were in charge of the next NBA Live. I don't think we'd even be talking about NBA 2K in a few years. Thank you so much, Daryl. That's very high praise.
Oh, I saw that comment and I kind of lit up. No, I really appreciate that. I think that a lot of what we talk about is, some of it is common sense, but also it's stuff that people think about, but often don't have the platform that we do, or don't know how to exactly, you know, put it into words. you know, what they want in the games and what's wrong with the games and stuff like that. So I definitely, we definitely appreciate that comment.
Very, very flattering to hear that our ideas are resonating with people, and it just goes to show that people are interested in live and do have similar ideas about what would make it a viable game again. So here's hoping, as always, and we will circle back to that as I'm sure we do with a lot of topics. But there's just so much we can go on and on about that. We will dedicate future shows to it, I am sure. Also, shout out to Albert, who has thrown us a mailbag question before about the 2005, sorry, 2006 76ers a few episodes back. That was a fun topic to deal with Derek. He agrees with your suggestions for the game. It says 2K17 offense and 2K19 defense, basically the perfect gameplay experience. So once again, what we said resonated with a few people.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to argue that 2K19 didn't have possibly the best defense on this gen for NBA 2K. Like I said, the way they jump out at shooters, the way the defense rotates, the way the interior defense is more sound, the way the help defense is better. It's the main reason why my brother and I are so excited to get into that 2K19 season with those retro rosters that are coming out. Because we know that when we play against each other, there isn't going to be a constant cheese fest, a constant exploit fest. You know what I mean? Like we're going to be more playing the game as opposed to trying to dodge issues. So yeah, that's thank you again. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, basically we agree.
And finally, Reed was also offering up some very nice compliments as well. Said great show. I was going to tune in for the first 15 minutes because he had errands to run, but couldn't turn it off. So that's also nice to hear that people were enjoying it so much. Of course, if you can take us on the go, we are on Spotify and other podcatching apps. If you do want to listen to us as you commute or do chores or run errands or whatever, if that's at all feasible, so definitely feel free to do that. But if we provided you with a fun distraction either way, yeah, we're so happy. But once again, thank you for all these compliments. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, I do want to point out too, we were talking about the NBA 2K12 cover, the Legends cover with Magic, Jordan,
Oh
and Bird.
yes.
And Lady Culture sent me the thing she has hanging up in her house. She sent me a picture of it. And it is that cover. It's the cover of NBA 2K12 with Bird, Magic, and Jordan on the front, the
The
one that I sent
the
you in the
triple
chat.
cover, yeah.
Yeah,
Is
the
that
triple
was it a
cover, which is
GameStop exclusive or something? Because
it was, I think it was very rare because I saw it and I took a screenshot of it. I swear, like, and it was at GameStop and it was in one of their bins because obviously it wasn't a current system, and it had all three of them on the cover. And I don't know if that was like a one day exclusive or a short-term exclusive and stuff like that, but I knew I wasn't losing my mind when I
yeah, because
brought
I.
that up because I
Yeah,
had
now
seen it.
once after you showed it to me, it did seem familiar, but I do think it was some kind of rare situation. I'd love to get we should get to the bottom of the story of it and follow up on it again on a future show if we can find out the exact story. But the separate covers were definitely more common. The MJ cover was the most common of all. Funnily enough, I have actually just acquired copies for 360 and PS3, both Bird and Magic covers, because I found them cheap on eBay. And even though I have 2K12 already on both PS3 and Xbox 360 and PC for that matter, I had to get them again just so I could collect the covers. So that's how crazy I am. If I could find the triple cover, well, actually that one's probably going to be very expensive, so maybe that won't be in the collection. But no, that's cool. I'm glad we're able to at least get some more information on that. Well, we know you're not imagining things because it's a thing. It exists.
Yeah, I mean, she heard. It's good that we're getting these listeners as well. She heard that we were talking about it on the podcast. That's why she sent it to me. And yeah, I like I said to you, I was like, I hope I'm not losing my mind because I definitely remember it. And remember, I said to you, like, I'm looking for my 2K12 physical copy, and for some reason, I can't find it in my apartment right now. But I almost want to say that I have that cover, but we'll see if I can find it. So.
That'll be that may be the holy grail of 2K12 collecting right there. But yes, basketball gaming obviously something we enjoy, and it's great that there are so many people who share the passion as we do for this hobby, and that they are com these nice comments on the show and everything, and of course the activity in the forum and social media and whatnot, and Reddit and Operation Sports. Obviously, a lot of people into basketball gaming. But something we wanted to talk about this week, and it's a topic you brought up, and it's also something I've thought about in the past, is the idea of whether it's an adult hobby, or, because this is one of these things with video games, is that there's, as much as they've become mainstream, there's definitely a stigma, is there not, against playing video games as an adult, and this idea that, oh, you need to put away childish things, as the saying goes, and whatnot, and not play them anymore. But yet there are a lot of people our age and older who are enjoying the virtual hardwood, and rightfully so, we think. And yeah, it's such a shame there is still that stigma there, although of course there is separation between those older gamers like us, old heads like us, and the younger gamers in what we want and how it's pulling the games in different directions and whatnot. But, you know, it's not shameful to still play. As long as you're taking care of your business, what you do as a recreational hobby, there should really be no shame about it, as long as it's not hurting yourself or anybody else. And again, if you're taking care of your bills and going to work and you have a social life and whatnot and taking care of yourself, to unwind by playing, you know, basketball video games or any genre of games, but certainly basketball video games we focus on here on the NLSC podcast, why should there be any shame in that?
Yeah, do what you enjoy, do what you love, and as long as it's not negatively impacting anybody else and it's not making you ignore your responsibilities in life, your important responsibilities, then do it. You know, it's one of the things that bothers me the most. So some people, you know, I'll use an example of something that happened in my life. Somebody that I know, I'm not going to say, you know, from what, but they said to me, because somebody came up to my desk and was like, this is when I was at work. They said, you know, they're talking to me about NBA 2K. It was when one of the new 2Ks were coming out, and I was explaining to them, you know, how I play the game and why I may stick with a past game and play it more. I was talking about 2K17 and all of that stuff. And then the kid left, and somebody who was about 10 feet away from me, at her desk, said, I don't know how you can play those games as much as you do. I don't know how you can play them. Like, she said something along the lines that she felt like it was a big waste of time. This is the same person that talked about how she was binge watching for days The Big Bang Theory. And I need to make a point about this. What is the difference between somebody binge watching Netflix, like the Big Bang Theory, maybe CSI, if that's on there, you know, NCIS and these shows and all of this stuff, Dexter, you know, these are all the ones that I've heard that people binge watch and stuff like that. What's the difference between somebody doing that and you playing a video game that you're interacting with? How is the video game a bigger waste of time, and how is that less adult than sitting, laying there on your laptop or you know, it's on your TV or whatever, and, you know, with, I don't know, like food in front of you, or just with a, you know, just sitting in front of you, you know, or whatever, and watching, binge watching television shows? I'll never understand that. Like you said, there's like a stigma around it. And you know what? Do what you love. If it's something that you enjoy, you know what? You know, some people play video games now. Some people our age and a little bit younger and a little bit older play them with their wife or with their girlfriend or vice versa, etc. You know what I mean? It doesn't need to be an alone experience or an isolated experience either.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the people say, "Well, how can you have a healthy marriage when you game?" And the thing is, well, it's the same as people who would go off and fish, or go off and with their friends, or just watch TV, or for that matter, as you said, a lot of couples, if they're both into games, be they tabletop games or video games or board games. Well, they have the tabletop games, I suppose, but all the different kinds of RPGs and dice games and video games and everything else. If you both enjoy it, then it becomes a shared activity. And the idea that it's not adult enough, what do? Just we sit around with our hands folded in our laps neatly talking about finances? Obviously, those discussions must be had in a relationship, and things that you must, even if you are single, you must, as I said, take care of your bills, take care of your financial situation. But this idea that it's not appropriate for adults to engage in this, like, and I'm glad you brought up the binge-watching TV, because that was the first place I went as well. I mean, I enjoy television shows and movies and whatnot, but there is really no difference. In fact, there's less interaction, so there's in a way that can be less stimulating than playing games. But the point is, if you spend a whole lazy Saturday watching 8 hours of TV or whatever, how is that any better, or indeed worse, than playing a video game for that time? It's still sitting there basically doing nothing. And of course, with video games, we could argue that we also, you and I, people like you and I, also make mods, which is a creative endeavor for them. But even if you're just playing games, making memories, having fun, sometimes socializing with them, because video games can be a very social experience. Less so online, but certainly that is part of it. If you can't catch up with your friends in person, you can certainly play with them online these days as well. It's not quite the same, but it is what it is. But yeah, when it comes down to it, there is no difference between that and any other leisure activity, except that it has this stigma of, oh, it's the thing that kids do, and you need to grow out of it. And I just don't get that. There's no logical argument for that. Not when you're also, again, as you said, binge watching TV, and can do that for upwards of 4, 5, 6 hours a day.
Right, entertain. It's entertainment still. It's
Yep.
just it's another form of entertainment. And like you said, it's a stigma. It's like social conditioning. It's people being conditioned to say, well, it's not an adult thing. But again, I can give so many examples of why it's really no different and almost sometimes more stimulating than sitting there, laying there and just binge watching show after show after show after show. Again, these are actors, right? So like this is it's again not real life. And just like video games are not real life. It's an entertainment experience. It's so, the other thing that too I wanted to bring up, and you brought up fishing and whatnot. Why is there certain acceptable forms of like being an adult?
Of entertainment
Like,
as an adult,
yeah,
I mean
why is there
it's these
like
established
what?
things, because you can say, oh well, fishing, you could possibly catch something to eat, so it has a practical use that video games arguably do not. Although when you look at some of the money that pro gamers make, the fact that it is a career these days, one might want, and some of the opportunities that playing games and running the NLSC has opened up for me for international travel and learning about the industry and meeting people from other countries, that's it opens doors as well. You never know. So, and other content creators, obviously, in the community have benefited or even gained jobs, gained employment from video games. So, yeah, it's tough to say. It's the new rock and roll, I think, to coin a phrase. And it's, that's a, on TV Tropes they do, and I don't think they're the ones that coined it, but it is sort of that phrase, the whole thing, how rock and roll was that big evil in the 50s, and then, then the next thing comes along, and then, oh, now TV is evil, and then now video games are evil, and bad for you, and childish, or whatnot, and not appropriate, and just the new thing that always comes along, and I mean, the stigma is there for comic books as well. I mean, I have friends who play games and are happily married as well, and spouses play games as well, and they also will still indulge in graphic novels, but they also still go to work and do responsible things. And again, not to repeat the pay the bills thing, but my point is they're not just wasting all their money on this stuff. If and again, waste, even the fact that I have to say that it's wasting, is myself in internalizing some of this negativity around these hobbies. But the point is, I mean, are they reading kiddie comics? No, they're reading more adult graphic novels. But the point is, if it's the kind of medium you enjoy, or watching anime, or anything like that, these stigmas, it does come down to people just being able to look down their nose at somebody else and say, for shame on you. You're not an adult, or you don't like what I like. It really just comes down to judging people, and because people do like to judge other people.
Well, some people, I mean, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Some people do this, and these are the same people that go out and get drunk all the time. Like, oh, how could you play a video game? Like, how could you be an adult playing a video game that's so childish? And meanwhile, they're going out and getting drunk. Like, it just doesn't, none of it makes sense to me, to be completely honest with you. We talked about collectibles too, and you and I have pretty vast basketball gaming collections.
Indeed.
And how is that any different than people who collect and work on cars or stamps? or anything like that. Is it less mature because we're collecting video games? Like some people collect movies, posters, stuff like that, and I don't hear those people getting, you know, talked down to. So I you know, what's the difference with collecting video games? So I'll never understand it. I think it's like I said, it's a form of social conditioning. I'll say again, like I said off the top of this segment, is do what you want, do what you love. If it's not getting in the way of your, you know, your responsibilities and negatively affecting your relationships, and, you know, as long as it's not making you ignore important people in your life and stuff like that, and it's something that, you know, you truly enjoy, do it.
Yeah,
and
totally
agree.
The way
I look at it. So.
It's, and you brought it up. It's what is an adult activity, and it does come back to this idea that the games are still a fairly new medium, and they've taken the heat off TV and movies and things like that as far as supposed mindless entertainment, which again there have been studies on how mentally stimulating playing video games can be. And obviously, as far as collecting goes, I like to think that my collection has a practical use. Obviously, I can use it in content creation for the site, or I can pull out at any time that I have a free time to play, I can pull out any game in my collection and have a go of it, and play my favorites, or occasionally pull out an oddity and check it out again and remember why I didn't like it the first time or something like that, or have a bit of a LARP or whatever. And it's fun. And again, what do you expect an adult to do? Sit around drinking scotch and reading the paper? There is nothing wrong if you want, as long as you're not overindulging. Sure, enjoy a scotch, read the paper. And the thing is, you can do that and also play games and watch TV and socialize and go out with friends and have a nice meal. It's kind of pigeonholing somebody, and it's going to that worst stereotype of gamers, the living in the basement, playing games all day and having no social skills and whatever. And it's the same kind of stigma against people who like comic books. But look how mainstream comic books and comic book movies and comic characters and so forth, how mainstream they are now. And anybody kind of making a joke about nerd culture, and certainly there are some, you can be really far into things more so than other things, and the same with basketball gaming for that matter. But the idea, I mean, again, look how mainstream basketball gaming is now with the popularity of NBA 2K. So the idea that it's just this little niche hobby for man babies and whatnot, you know, all kinds of whatever stigma you want to put on it, whatever kind of derogative names you want to coin, these, you know, adult children, you know, this image of it, it's not the case. We know a lot of people that have kids that play, they grew up with basketball games, now they're playing basketball games with their kids. We see it on social media, some of the people that we follow, and content creators in our community. So again, it's just this old school mentality, and it's funny because you and I are often we stand up for the past, but certainly there are old attitudes that don't hold up, and certainly the attitudes towards new media tend to be very resisting of change and very stubborn. And again, it's this idea that some things can only be enjoyed if you haven't grown up, and it's just not the case.
Yeah, I want to make a couple more points on this too. You brought up the creative side. There's also that side that, you know, not just for adults, but for these teenagers, young adults, etc. There's this creative aspect, whether you're playing on console or PC, whether you're playing in sports game with sports games or non-sports games and stuff, whether it be creating your character, creating art for the game, level editors, creating players, creating rosters, that creative side that you get to tap into in video games that you don't get to when it comes to shows and stuff like that. And you're using your brain in different ways and whatnot. There's also something that's incredibly underrated, is the sense of accomplishment, the sense of a reward for completing a level, a stage, completing a game, completing a roster project, creating the completion of a level that you created and other people are enjoying, the reward of streaming, because you're not streaming a show, people. The reward of uploading content and people enjoying it, sharing your ideas and sharing your content, the reward of streaming and having people tune into a live stream of you playing a game and you being able to talk to them and stuff like that. And it's not just all about gaming. Some of these streamers and stuff talk about real life stuff as well while they're playing the games and stuff like that. It's the interactive piece of video gaming. And why is that being discouraged, right? Why would that be something that you can't do as an adult? Why would that be discouraged? So yeah, and that's for all ages. So there's definitely the creativity and reward side too that you get from video games that you can, seldom get or not get at all from binge watching shows and stuff like that. But again, binge watching shows is never looked down upon. I never see that. But a video game gaming as an adult, that still does get looked down upon.
It hasn't quite got there as a socially acceptable hobby like TV watching has become.
Not yet.
Not
Yeah, not yet.
quite yet, no. I wanted to bring up something else as well, because obviously you and I, in our mid-30s now, been playing games for a long time. The idea of, will you be a lifelong gamer? I mean, it's hard to say. It's overwhelming to think of sometimes. But, I mean, I feel that I'll always play video games as long as I enjoy them and have the time to do so. And the ability, I suppose. I don't really think. Again, I'm not putting a time limit on it. I don't say, well, I'm 36 now. I must stop gaming. I have no reason to. It's just because some people in society, and possibly becoming a louder minority of people who are clinging to an outdated, old-fashioned way of thinking, that say that it's wrong. I think we are getting to the stage that we are in the upper end of the core key demographic, even possibly a couple of years out of that key demographic, and that's been an interesting and sometimes frustrating experience for me at least, and perhaps you feel the same way, that we are no longer part of that key core audience that's really being focused with the marketing and design approaches of 2K, especially these days, and actually NBA Live as well, considering they were going for the quote unquote new younger demographic with 18 and 19, and we saw what happened there. But it is getting to that stage where, I do realize that I am that elder statesman of basketball gaming, and I know there's people in the community that are older than us that are saying, "You kids in your 30s, you think you're an elder statesman." But certainly, if the key demographic is kind of 18 to 34 or 15 to 29 or whatever the demographics are these days with the Rangers, at in your mid 30s, you are starting to age out of that. That demographic, the core demographic. Now, that doesn't mean that it's inappropriate for you to be playing the games. It's not like this is a toy intended for ages, 3 to 5 or whatever. But at the same time, when you think of what you want out of the games and how the rest of the community is, and sometimes, our opinions and how we view games and what we want to see out of games, I'm getting to that stage where I'm not about to quit games or running the NLSC, and again, that's the kind of thing I'll do as long as I'm able and enjoying it, and I still am for both playing and running the NLSC. But the older you get, Derek, certainly the older that I've been getting, and we are basically the same age, is that I'm realizing that I am aging out of that core key demographic, and that my opinions may be different, and my nostalgia is different, and my opinions on what the games need to be. Although obviously some of our listeners certainly agree with us, but I do feel that there is that disconnect with a large portion of the audience, especially as it's become more mainstream.
I just want to make a quick point before I dive into that. Just a reminder to everybody that the TV is a tool. Your TV is for entertainment.
Oh
I just
yeah.
want to point that out. The TV in itself, Netflix is entertainment. That's a toy. Okay? Just want to throw that out there. As far as we are absolutely 100% outside of the target audience right now, age-wise. Like, there's no doubt about it. I've talked about this before. I've talked about who your average viewers are on your YouTube videos. I've had people send me examples of what their channel analytics look like, all of that stuff, their channel data. And I honestly think that the target demographic for sports games and video games in general, actually, is probably between the ages of 12 and 26, I want to say. Maybe 14 and 26, 12 and 26. That's what they're mainly targeting. We're way outside that. We're about 10 years over it
Yeah.
now.
Scarily.
As far And you know what? That affects things like we've talked about in modes, you know, what they put in the games, how much they focus, you know, how they focus more on online play. I want to say that I have a good balance in my life when playing these games because I don't approach the online scene. So I'm not seeing the teenagers act out, you know what I mean, on NBA 2K when you jump online. I'm not seeing the things that are being said. I'm not seeing the way those modes are structured, etc., as much as you are. So I have a balance in my life where I enjoy the offline content. I try to make the gameplay better if it needs to be with sliders. I get into creating my own content and stuff like that and enjoy those aspects of the games. Unfortunately, with you who does like online aspects of these games and would love to get more involved in stuff like that with that type of content, you're experiencing a little bit more of the frustration than I am. And
That,
that's
that's true.
unfortunate.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, at this point, I'm kind of over it, and I'm enjoying that getting back to that single player experience. Although, I mean, I played a lot of my career, which is the NBA side of my career, which is single player. So it's not like I was exclusively online, but I definitely was playing it to grind up a player for the possibility of playing online, and was playing online a fair bit as well. And that's definitely where you do feel that generation gap, where you see the kind of style that people are playing. It is more of that meta gaming that exploits that the curry slide cheese and the zigzag cheese and that kind of stuff, and the selfishness and everything, and you do wish that you can see that even just over the last few years, and maybe it's because I'm becoming that grumpy old man, but you do see that change, and I think it. But we're not the only ones who point this out. As we've said before, a lot of people have mentioned this of the online scene. If you, a lot of the most common complaints on Reddit and social media about the online play are about these issues that I talk about. So it's nice to know that it's not just, angry old heads, basically. There's a lot of players in their 20s, in that core demographic, in that target audience, that feel this way, and that speaks to the design of the game as much as anything else. And it's a thing that I think 2K, well, not just think, I strongly believe that 2K need to address moving forward. But yeah, that is definitely an area where I feel like, it's kind of like a lethal weapon. I'm too old for this stuff. You definitely do feel that way.
And I think though that the way I play, I'll just put it that way. And I think there's a lot of people that play the way that I play, as far as like got people our age that don't even like go near the online modes. I think the way that I play is more sustainable because when those online features are taken away, that content that you created or that content that you're into is still there. You know what I
Oh,
mean?
definitely, yeah.
For Yeah, and you can still jump into those rosters and jump into seasons, which is what I like to do, seasons or my league or franchise or dynasty or whatever the hell you want to call it. And this makes games like Madden, soon MLB The Show, the basketball games, any NBA games, etc. It makes those games better to revisit. And enjoyable to revisit and content that you can still sink your teeth into. So, I'm glad the way, I'm glad that I'm the type of gamer that I am, and I don't rely on anything as far as like that social aspect, like the online social aspect, and that, I have my two brothers that I play with, and that's my social gaming. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
and you see this with people saying, "Oh, who wants to play offline? Who wants to play bots?" And this kind of thing. Well, because we desire that different experience. We'd like the experience of, if you are a franchise gamer, there's lots of ways to play franchise, of course, but the way I would always play it would be to assume control of usually the Bulls, my favorite team, and make the moves that I wish they could make, and play out my GM fantasies, because and avoid the frustrations of watching Garpax make a what I felt was certainly the wrong moves, and that's the kind of appeal of those modes. Or my team collecting everything and collecting your favorite cards and playing through the challenges and everything. So the idea that there's nothing to the offline experience, again, it's an elitist idea, and it's a, in fact, there is some childishness there. The idea that the way that I play is the only right way to play, but we do see that with that younger generation, that have been brought up with online gaming because they have connections that are worth playing online on. Trying to play it on a 56K modem back in the day, not a very fun experience, kids. So there's definitely that generation gap there.
Yeah, I want to bring this up. You brought up 56K modem. Do you guys not realize that, you know, the people that talk poorly about adults who get into video games or say that that's more of a childish thing? Do you not understand that we get excited about technology too? It's like you're never too old to get excited about new technology, about new advancements in technology, new systems that come out. You people get excited. Oh, I can't wait for the new Spider-Man movie, or I can't wait for this new movie to come out. And oh, did you see the new movie theater they built? And oh, they have these screens and these seats and all of this stuff. You know, we can get excited about that and shouldn't feel ashamed about that, about technology and video games and stuff like that, and new modding capabilities and new, you know, like I said, customization and stuff. Do people not see that side of it? This is amazing.
And this is what's important to you. This is what's important in the world. No, we understand there are more important issues in the world, but for my entertainment purposes, yes, it's this game again. And I feel like I'm picking on fishing here, but imagine if you are into fishing, company comes out with a new fancy rod that is whiz bang and everything and great at catching fish. You're like, oh, check that out. Check out the new John Deere tractor. King of the Hill reference.
We've learned on this episode of the NLC podcast is Andrew secretly despises fishing.
I'm a secret fisherman who's trying to, but I'm yet ashamed of it and trying to draw attention away from it. Either way, angling, if you will. it's one of those things, like you say, it's whatever you're excited about, and you do get into these things and these new developments and the new movie coming out or whatever, or if you're into skating, oh, they built a new skate park, whatever. So yeah, it does come down to that elitism, but there's that generational gap in the way we play games, and as long as the games continue to cater to everybody, and that's getting harder and harder, obviously, especially as they try to balance online and offline, that's a whole other topic, of course, but it does get tough to really cater to everybody's tastes. But I mean, to answer the question of how long do I think I'll be gaming, as long, I don't see an end to it. As far as me deciding this is it.
Yeah, as long as we still enjoy it. I posted that video of MLB The Show 20. I posted highlights on Twitter of my brother and I playing, and just so excited about how it looked. And a lot of people agreed with me. Didn't that look like real life?
Oh, like, it did. How can I not? That's incredible, yeah.
how can I not get excited about that? Right? I mean, that's cool. Like, why is there an age on that?
Mm.
Like, oh, he posted about a video game. Like, so what? Like, look at this. This looks like real life. This is cool. This is an amazing technology achievement. This is just an amazing technological achievement. It's just amazing. I'm with you. I don't know if this will ever end. You know, my brothers, I'm really close with them. The biggest reason right now that I'm in gaming, into basketball gaming and gaming in general, is because of them. They're not going anywhere soon. We love it. We still have our video game weekends. We're all in our mid to late 30s. And that's not going to stop. I've said this so many times. Do you know how many memories I've created playing video games with my brothers?
Absolutely, yeah.
We talk about them every time. You know, my brother, Mark, my oldest brother, he comes over every weekend, usually on Sundays, when we have our gaming weekends. And we talk about all of the great stuff constantly, just performances that we've had on basketball games, the video game legends we've created, the ridiculous block shot totals or steal totals or scoring totals. And, you know, we get into all the mods we've created and we talk about the mods we've created and all of that stuff. Why would I give that up? What? Yeah. So we can sit and watch Netflix? Like, why would I give up?
Like an adult, Derek. Yeah, well, like an adult. You sit there quietly and watch your TV like an adult.
Right. So I just want to point that out, that there's definitely different the preferences are fine. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with you sitting and watching Netflix.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We don't mean to disparage other hobbies, which we participate in to various degrees. Not so
Except
much fishing.
Fishing. Right, exactly.
Not so much fishing
Discover
on our part, but
it tells you that you are wasting your time by fishing. But yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I think, if you like it, if you like Netflix and you like watching shows, watch your shows. If you like going to the movies, go watch your movies. If you like to knit. I don't like to knit. I just want to point that out, but I don't hold it against anybody. But if you want to do that stuff, do it. But if it, don't talk down about somebody who's just enjoying another form of entertainment.
Agreed, and obviously I can relate. I mean, even when I went with my cousin, obviously Clinton, that we'd play games in the holidays, and even when we catch up now, when he comes to stay for a night, or I go up to his place, we'll hang out, we'll have a couple of beers, we'll play some games. And we didn't have beers as teenagers under my parents' roof back in the day, but no, I mean we will, we'll hang out, we'll eat some junk food, we'll play some games, we'll make a bit of a throwback night of it, and it's then when we shake hands the next day and, go back to our, after the time off and go back to our lives. He goes back to work, I go back to work, etc. That's just the way it goes. But it's always fun to, like your brothers, to reconnect over that shared interest that we have. And I want to make, to finish up here on this point. It's kind of hypocritical because obviously the fact that we've been talking about it for so long, that half an hour on this show, does show that we care about other opinions to a certain extent. In so much as it bothers us when people have this attitude, this snarky attitude towards other people's hobbies. At the end of the day, I think that's something that we should call out, and that's kind of what we're doing here. But at the end of the day, as far as feeling any shame, and you touched on this right there at the end there, as far as feeling any shame or feeling bad about what you do playing video games, basketball video games, or any other genre, forget that. Just say to people, well, what do you do for fun? And they say whatever, you say, well, that's fine, this is what I do for fun, and I take care of my business and have fun. If that's, if you want to make a big deal out of it, I don't want to hear it. That's that you can think what you like, and you can, I think it's an outdated way of thinking. I think you're very wrong about it, but think what you like. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing and enjoying life as I think we all are entitled to do. And have our hobbies and have our leisure time and everything. So obviously, again, we have, because we are responding to it, it does get to us to a certain extent. At the same time, we can put it out of our minds, and my point to everyone, Derek, would be that if somebody comes at you like that, just laugh it off, because, and don't feel bad about enjoying something if it's not hurting you or anybody else, and you're, again, not to get too repetitive, but if you're taking care of your business, as long as you are doing your adult things. And then you have that time set aside to for leisure time. Fill that leisure time with the hobbies that bring you pleasure and make positive memories and are fun for you and anybody else you share them with.
100%. And the last couple of points I want to make on this. Number one, we are human. So yes, those comments sometimes where people say, "Well, get a life," or the games aren't for adults, and what do you do with, how can you do that with your time? Of course, they're going to hit a spot with us. We're human, okay?
Want to defend yourself, yeah.
No, right. Number two, there's the other thing that really bugs me is the whole, well, he doesn't have a life, he plays video games. Do you think that, so can I say the same thing for you because you binge watch Netflix or binge watch shows? Just because we enjoy something or it's part of even a daily routine, that doesn't mean that we don't have a life. That doesn't mean that we don't have a life outside of video games. That doesn't mean that we're not spending time with our family or loved ones outside of that, or going house shopping or doing things around the house or going out shopping or, doing or eating dinner together and stuff. It doesn't mean that life stops and that we don't have anything else that we do outside of video gaming. I just want to make that point as well. It's just another form of entertainment, and it doesn't take up 24 hours a day.
Absolutely. So we are basketball gamers for life. That is basically our takeaway from here, but we still enjoy hitting the virtual hardwood and sometimes the virtual blacktop as well, and we shall continue to do so, and of course, come on here and talk to you all about it.
Right, and if you have a problem with it, go fishing.
Yeah. So that's something that's been on our minds for a while, so we've definitely great to get that out and to discuss that topic, but it's now time to move on to the mailbag, which, Derek, we love doing each and every week.
Yeah, we got a lot of great questions this time, too. We have to even push some of the questions to the next episode because we're going to do two on this show. So, yeah, thank you all for participating. We appreciate it.
We don't mind having too many in the bag, but better than having too few, obviously. So thank you very much to everybody who has submitted questions this week, and we will roll them over, as Derek said, to a future show. But keep sending them in, because once again, we'd rather have too many than too few. So we'll always keep them in the bag and get to them as soon as possible. And if we ever need to do a big mailbag show, then we can always do that as well, as we did at the end of last year. But this week we have a couple of questions. First one is from Gilbert's Grape Sheepsman on Twitter, of course, a loyal listener of Holding Court as well, Derek.
No, absolutely. And we got to get episode 16 of Holding Court out there soon. We've had some good feedback on that show. That, of course, is more of the along the lines of Real Hoop. That's what we usually talk about on that show. But yeah, no, I appreciate, we have cross listeners. We have people that listen to this show and that show, and I appreciate that.
Very flattering, obviously, that our opinions on both the real and virtual hardwood are valued and appreciated and enjoyable to listen to, obviously. Certainly that is the plan for both podcasts there. But with that being said, Gilbert's Grave has asked, what do you think is needed to make simulation-style basketball games fun again? The lack of competition has definitely caused 2K to become lethargic with their efforts, and do you think limiting microtransactions would be a good start? And I love this question, obviously, and thank you very much once again, but this is particularly pertinent, Derek, because as you recall, during the previous season of 2K21, Mike Wong, Baluba, talked quite openly about the approach of balancing realism and fun. And we've given our opinions on whether we think the balance was right or whether they kind of hit either target as far as fun or realism in 2K21. Some might say they kind of came up short on both aspects there. But yeah, this is a problem with the games. And we've talked about it before. A lot of people get the games every year out of obligation now and get some enjoyment out of them, as we do too. But there's definitely more dissatisfaction. And so the idea of trying to make them more fun is, you know, some people say, oh, well, lots of people buy them. But if you look at what people are saying about them, you know, bringing the fun back to simulation basketball games is, you know, that's certainly an issue that needs to be tackled.
I mean, they're aware of it. I want to point out realism isn't defenders just moving out of the way while you bring up the ball. Or, you know, realism isn't just you being able to go baseline and just get dunks constantly or help defense never coming over or faulty double team logic. And it's also not fun. So I just want to point that out. They wanted to put some fun back into the game, you know, but the game is far from simulation the way it operates. And there's too many exploits. I think as far as getting back to a simulation style of gameplay that's also fun, I think one of the biggest obstacles for them and one of the most important things is to get rid of those exploits, to get rid of that faulty AI. You know, we talked about what we wanted as far as Frankensteining a game, and we talked about how 2K17's offense mixed with 2K19's defense would be a pretty great experience on the hardware. And why was that? That's because the defense in NBA 2K19 overall was very sound. It was smart AI. It didn't have as many exploits. And on 2K17's offense, you had that feel of control, like the dribbling felt tight, the size up breaking out of it and whatnot felt tight. You know, catching the ball and going felt right. You know, going to the hoop and being able to use the joystick to finish on either side, or, you know, the feel of going baseline and being able to choose whether to do a reverse layup and everything, it all felt tight and right, and it felt smooth. Feel is just so important, and the AI is also equally important in many different ways in order to give you that fun sim experience. And I think they can achieve the right balance. I think it can happen. But we have two different components that we're talking about here too. We're talking about online single player feel and 5-on-5 offline feel. And in order to be able to get both right, that's a hard thing to do. In order to make both feel right, because they're two different types of experiences, I think that's a really big obstacle. And I still think they can do it. I think they did a good job. Like you said, you had over 500 games played of NBA 2K17. I think they struck a pretty, you know, they made a pretty positive impression off of that game, even with some brick wall defense on NBA 2K17. I do think the right balance can be achieved.
just want to put it out there. I booted up the game again so that I could bring it up on my profile as a recently played game on PS5 and see just how many hours I played of that game. 2,762 hours from memory.
Yeah, I mean, look at that.
That's
And like I said,
about
I want to point this
113 days, to put that in. 113 days out of 2016 to 2017 that many full days of gameplay time, basically. That's more time than I've spent on Fallout combined.
Yeah, 2K17. Should spend more time fishing. NBA 2K17 had a great overall reception. Go, and I want people to do this. Boot up YouTube and put in NBA 2K17 gameplay and look at the comments that came in for all the pre-release footage and the regular release footage, like in the first couple of weeks. Look at the comments, look at the reception, and look what people were saying about it. Now, do the same thing with NBA 2K20 and NBA 2K21 and look at the comments on those pre-release videos and on the videos in the first couple of weeks. It's night and day different. You're going to see that people overall had a positive reception for NBA 2K17. And again, and I wanted to talk about this more on the last show, pun intended, MLB The Show 20. Go look at the user feedback. Look at the feedback on the videos. Look at the feedback on the reviews, the user reviews, all of that stuff. Look what people are saying about it. I am absolutely, and I said this on YouTube, on Twitter, I'm absolutely sick of the whole, well, people just go online doing about NBA 2K and NBA Live. Well, people just go online to complain. Like, people are going to complain. You're going to hear those people more, et cetera. This is a lie. This is an absolute lie.
People
There is
gush
no
too,
further
yeah.
than MLB The Show 20, where almost everybody that I see talking about that game just gushes about it. They talk about how great it is. You don't see those negative reviews. And guess what? There is no real competitor in the MLB gaming space, just like NBA 2K right now. It's MLB The Show. Major League Baseball 2K, the 2K series ended a long time ago. Now, I want to say their last game was like MLB 2K12 or 13, and they are on their own in that space, and people just absolutely love the game, right? So I'm absolutely sick of that. No, people, those are red flags. All of those negative reviews are red flags, and that's with EA Sports as well. That's with the NBA Live Series. This isn't just NBA 2K. They're red flags. Whether it be the Steam reviews, what people are saying, what they say on YouTube videos, what they're saying on Twitter, what they're saying on Reddit, all of that stuff, people complaining like that is a red flag, and it's not happening with every game.
And that's why the
So
sales
I just want
that's why the sales figures aren't necessarily an indication. Like, oh, it's doing well, and it's making money on recurrent revenue, because that's the way it's designed. And it's the only game on the market, so people will get it out of obligation, out of a desire to have a new game, a new basketball game every year, but they're not enjoying it as much as before. And it's not feeling entitled. It's not being spoiled. It's just not having a game that's satisfactory in across the board like it used to be. And getting back to the question, I think it really also does come down to what Gilbert Grape said, asking, do you think limiting microtransactions would be a good start? Now, unfortunately, this is very unlikely to happen, but yes, that is part of the problem with the sim games these days, basically 2K, because there's not many microtransactions in Live, or hasn't been since apart from outside of Ultimate Team, and of course, again, it's not there is no current NBA Live release either. So if you look at 2K, and we've talked about this before, is that by focusing on those recurrent revenue mechanics, you are adding an artificial grind to the game. If you choose not to play, you've got to grind very hard. So then the game becomes about work rather than enjoyment, and you've got to work very hard just to get a player that's fun to play with. And then by the time they're fun to play with, you get a few months out of them, and then or you grind really, really hard and have to go through a lot of unpleasant gameplay experiences to finally get them to where they need to be, and then the process starts again every year. So that's something I think that needs to be addressed, is that they're not going to get rid of microtransactions, unfortunately, but as long as they design them in a way that adds this artificial grind if you eschew them, then the games aren't going to be fun. And because the games are designed around this, you're it doesn't have that fun. The fun is not being prioritized, and not just that, but things like a Legends pool, for roster editing. Just having a collection of all the historical players in the game that you could put into rosters. That's not going to come back because then they can't make money from my team. So by focusing so much, and people say, "Oh, it's a business," blah blah blah. We know it's a business. We understand that. We appreciate that a multi-billion dollar corporation is trying to make money. Corporation's going to corporate, if you will. But it's clear when those philosophies conflict with with design philosophies and the idea of video games being fun, which is why we play them, after all. So limiting microtransactions, I don't know whether that's what we mean by limiting, obviously. But if they can design the game in a way that it's not as painful a grind, or if the or if grinding is feels like a more rewarding and fun gameplay experience, that you would say, well, you know what? I could pay to skip, but I don't want to pay to skip because it's too fun to want to skip, then that would change things. That would make things more fun from that perspective. But when it's pushing you to buy with microtransactions, with VC and everything, then it's not going to prioritize the fun. So absolutely, those kinds of mechanics, they do get in the way of the fun. So when people say it's optional and everything else and it's a business, we understand it's optional. We understand it's a business. We also understand it has a very negative impact on the quality of the gameplay experience, and that's undeniable at this point.
I want to bring up a point before I jump into that. MLB The Show 20 has a legends pool of about 200 legends. You don't think that's good with gamers? Do you know how many retro rosters have been created out of those 200 legends? Do you know how many people have posted positive reviews in part because it has features like that? Just food for thought, those people. You know, it. I can guarantee you that legends pools and the attention to legends and retro that the MLB The Show has helps their sales. I just want to point that it helps the bottom line. As far as oh, and they also have a My Team type mode that I don't play, and their sales are awesome. So the point is as far as like online, I'm not saying listen, the microtransaction BS needs to stop. It's been elevated every year. It's taking advantage of gamers. We've already talked about this at length. But you know, if we're talking about again fun and sim fun. I agree that the grind and everything and the artificial grind and the, you know, pressuring people to spend money gets in the way. But there's a couple different aspects that I want to bring up. One is artificial boosts are killing video games and killing the integrity of competition and killing, you know, true skill gap. And that needs to be looked at. If you're talking about finding the right balance between sim and fun and everything, the badge system, so it's so heavily dependent on badges, the games now. The you know the artificial boosts and general things like takeover and stuff like that, it is just absolutely ridiculous. And you have the very low skilled players getting away with playing absolutely ridiculous, unbelievably unfair, unrealistic types of basketball and dominating more skilled players. You've used examples of this with games that you've run into where people are just jacking up fadeaways from around half court and smoking them
Yep.
because of the artificial, because of paying to win and all of that stuff. So that's, you know, as far as you're talking about reaching a balance between sim and fun and can that happen, that stuff needs to go. That crap needs to go or be toned down. So I wanted to bring that up. The other aspect of this that I want to bring up is just gameplay. Gameplay, player movement. You know, how the guys move. You know, we talked about how the ridiculous running animations in like NBA 2K20 where they're completely hunched over, players are completely hunched over while they're running and it looks absolutely ridiculous. And that's on NBA 2K21 for the PC as well. You know, something simple as, you know, proper change of direction and proper catch and go and less canned animations and stuff like that. More control. We want more control as users. That's what gives us the most fun. That's also the most sim in many ways is, you know, you having control and, you know, to go along with the AI being smart, et cetera. So I just wanted to bring up those points. I agree 100% on everything you said about microtransactions. We've talked about it at length, but that artificial boost system, it needs to be toned down or it needs to go. And gameplay is paramount, just how the game plays and how it feels and everything. And I don't think that they have the right balance.
Well, it's those boosts do absolutely upset the balance, as do the pay to upgrade mechanics. And also, the way the game is being pulled in so many directions as well, and this is probably a topic we'll get into in depth at another time, but as the games have become more popular, they've also... It's hard to say this without sounding elitist and gatekeeping, and we've talked about gatekeeping a bit as far as gatekeeping ages for gaming on this episode, but as far as playing basketball games, obviously, I'm quite happy, I want everybody to enjoy these games, and the more people are playing them, that's cool. But the downside of that is it has gone beyond that sim, sim nation, if you will, beyond the sim gamers, and or people who are very passionate about basketball and basketball gaming, which is fine. But the downside is that it's pulling the game in many directions as they try and compete with games that aren't basketball games. GTA is popular, and GTA Online is popular, so now we have the neighborhood and now the city in next gen, and the city to explore. That doesn't have very much to do with basketball, and the fact that you can grind rails around the city and skateboard around the city, I mean, is it kind of fun? Sort of. It's certainly quicker to get around on the skateboard, I can tell you that much. But with that being said, the fact that there's still no proper matchmaking in the game, that there are some legacy issues with animations in the game, but we can grind rails on skateboards now, that's what was focused on, getting the city there. And they talk about being built from the ground up. Maybe the city was, but the basketball gaming experience wasn't. We can tell you that. We can point out many legacy issues. You look at my team, we want to have this card collecting mode where you can get these super cards and these super boosts. What does that result in? These unbalanced cards that have players that don't have their realistic abilities. So the fun goes out there with a lack of balance and a lack of realism. So it's trying to appeal to everybody, and by trying to appeal to everybody, it's pulling the game in all kinds of directions as it tries to be, okay, we need that open world like GTA, and we need card collecting like a mobile game, and that kind of stuff. So as it's all this stuff is distracting from making this core experience of really fun and realistic basketball game, representing the sport of basketball realistically and having it be fun on the sticks. That's no longer the focus. What clothes can we put in the game? And when clothes are getting more attention, and you can see how much attention it's getting from how much it's promoted on the social media, on Twitter, then that's the problem. And so it sounds very elitist to say, but unfortunately the popularity of 2K has worked against it in some ways. It's in a way the game's success has become its own worst enemy.
No, it really has, and copycats will always be out there. Unfortunately, games that are incredibly popular over the last couple of years have influenced all types of AAA games, indie games, etc., to come out and implement those features. And it's or in some way, shape, or form, in order to catch that specific audience, and that was enjoying those types of games. So yeah, I mean, we talked about that earlier in the show, to circle back, is copycats will always be out there. Unfortunately, when you have a game like NBA 2K, though, NBA 2K is again the only basketball gaming option out there right now. I mean, not basketball gaming option, excuse me, NBA 5-on-5 sim option, really, out there. And people who want to get their virtual basketball fix, as we've stated so many times before, just have that option. So those mechanics that you're talking about, the copycat stuff, the neighborhood, the emphasis on clothes, all what you wear and all of that stuff, and that is what people are going to get, because that's the game that they have to buy if they want to get their virtual hardwood experience. I also want to point out that SimNation and hashtag SimNation and all of that stuff is nothing more than marketing to me now. That's the way I look at it. It's a marketing gimmick. It's a marketing thing. It's not based on what you're actually getting in the video game, etc. It's, to me, it's just marketing. That's the way I look at
And
SimNation now.
you touched on something there that I think is, it's a recurring point that we make here on the NLC podcast, but when 2K was trying to overtake Live, and obviously did so, it was by making a superior basketball game. It is no longer competing with NBA Live. It is trying to compete with GTA Online. Well, it's under the same 2K umbrella, I suppose, but it's still trying to, follow its success. It's trying to ape the success of a Fortnite, of Call of Duty, of other games that have got all these, you know, their elements of what they do.
God, how many Fortnite knockoffs have we seen?
Stuff implemented
in Fortnite. I mean, the popularity of Fortnite was just unbelievable, and it was so heavily promoted. And then NBA 2K started putting Fortnite mechanics in their games, and then you started seeing it in some of the indie games and some of the other AAA titles, and it's just like, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, from the art direction to everything else.
So that's what they're doing, and that's what they're trying to compete with. That's the audience that they're going for. So they're no longer competing with NBA Live, so it's not about not even making a fun basketball game. It's making a game that appeals to, casts a wide net. So it kind of comes back to a point that we've made a lot on the NLC podcast, and I'm sure we'll continue to make. But what is needed to make simulation-style basketball game fun again? Competition in that space.
I think competition will help. But if you want to talk about what they could do if no competition comes into the space, it's basically what we said.
Yeah.
Gameplay is paramount. Gameplay is paramount. Smart AI, more control for the user, less emphasis on artificial boosts. So more true competition. Don't compromise the integrity of competition. And really, that's a lot of it. That really is. It's just, you know, it's striking that right balance, being more fair to the gamer, thinking about the true competition aspect as opposed to the artificial aspect.
Focusing on a fun experience, not just a way to drain money from the gamer. Because as long as you're focusing on that, if that's where your priorities lie, obviously that's something you're going to do because everybody does it until such time as legislation is passed that stops microtransactions, I suppose. But yes, you know, it comes down to focusing on actually making a fun game and not prioritizing the recurrent revenue mechanics.
Yeah, 100%. And I do love that question, so thanks for asking.
And our second and final question this week comes from our good friend Rock, Jeff Cortinas on Twitter, of course. What do you think about removing the corner three? Only three-pointer will be above the break, and what impact do you think will it have on both real basketball and multiplayer gaming if it's done? So, yeah, interesting idea. I mean, certainly I think the very early ideas for the three-pointer, were they not, were just above the key. They didn't have the corner three originally. Well, that was one of the ideas that they toyed around with. So, yeah, that's interesting.
I have a few thoughts on this. Number one, I was looking up some data, and it looks like back in, like, 1997, 98, I think one of the top teams in the league only attempted 3.4 threes per game from the corner. And you've seen, you know, and back then, I want to say that teams were attempting roughly around 16 threes per game. Obviously, that number has gone way up, and teams are averaging over 30 threes, around 35 threes per game attempted. Now, 70 plus threes per game, if you combine both teams. And a lot of those threes are coming from the corner, from that short corner and whatnot. I think that what would end up happening is you would see some very odd spacing because of this. And you'd see a lot more slashing from the perimeter. I think what would end up happening is there wouldn't be as many drives and kicks as you see today.
You've got to have to kick blind backwards.
Right, exactly. You'd be having to kick more blind. You'd see different driving angles utilized. You'd see that person on the corner, instead of being a threat as a shooter, you'd be seeing them as a threat to drive and dish, because they'd have a bigger view of the floor spacing and more of a view of those shooters standing behind that three-point line. Do I think this would be a good direction for the NBA, for basketball? I don't. I think that if you're going to do that, you get rid of the three-point line altogether, to be completely honest with you, and go back to that style of play. And boy, wouldn't that be funny to watch?
It would be, yeah.
trying to see guys like Trae Young and Buddy Hield and even guys like Steph Curry and stuff like that, you know, trying to adjust to this game where they, you know, not only is their driving and kicking ability look completely different now and what was going to be less utilized than it is with the three-point line, but their shots, you know, what would those shots be talked about like if Trae Young's pulling up for 24 feet, 25 feet, et cetera, with no 3-point line? So yeah, it would be really interesting. I think what would end up happening would be the spacing would look awkward. You'd see more drives and kicks from that corner. That's what that would be utilized for. And yeah, that's basically it. As far as the multiplayer scene, how that would look, I think what would end up happening again is the spacing would look awkward, and it's a shot that these kids wouldn't even try to take. Like if there's a player out there and he's on an island in the corner, but it's not a three, these kids have been conditioned to say three or nothing, right? Three or layup. So do you think they're really kicking it out to that guy? And if they kick it out to that guy, do you think they're shooting it? Probably not. So what ends up happening is they'll either, if they actually do stuff like this, they would either, you know, make it so there's nobody in the corner, or they would ignore the guy, or if they caught it with him, they would utilize it the way I said that the NBA teams would utilize it, and they'd use that guy as a drive and kick option. I think you might even see more offense generated from that corner in a drive and kick capacity because of the view that the player has from the floor. So just pictured like Jaylen Brown for the Celtics sitting in that corner, and he gets the ball and there's no 3-point shot available. How do you think Jaylen Brown is going to be used? He's either driving baseline or he's going to be driving towards the cup, and he's going to have a perfect view of all the shooters at the top of the key and in, say, the right elbow extended three. He'll have a perfect view to be able to kick it out to them or just attack the hoop. You could also use that opposite corner as a dive man. So that guy can be a dive cutter. Not that that can't be used today, but more often than not, people just sit behind that 3-point line in order to shoot the three. So
I was thinking about it. You know, we see a lot of logo threes now, including to win the All-Star game, where, of course, it's played under the Elam rules these days. They've adopted that again this year. We're seeing a lot of players just run up and gun as soon as they get to the top of the key. We've seen that for the shot charts this year. That's how that's really changed. So although a lot of threes are taken from the corner, there's a lot of straight-on threes just run up and gun. So I could see that happening a lot more. I could see a lot of players just hanging around the top, basically turning the game into a three-point shootout, which I think would be pretty ugly and not at all fun basketball. Certainly, if not in real life, then I can see that's probably what would happen online. Basically, you get one person to create a big man with rebounding badges and rebounding abilities, and just park them there near the hoop, and everybody else just guns threes, and you just kick it back out to them at the top of the key. I think it would actually be a very ugly style of, an even uglier style, shall I say, of multiplayer gaming online.
I agree with that. And I also agree with it being even more of a 3-point shootout as far as like the top of the key and the elbows extended. I can see that. But again, if I'm looking at it from a real NBA perspective, and that corner has such a great view of the court for a drive and kick perspective, I know that the out of bounds can be considered another defender. But if you're using that as a creation point, I think that that is a good creation point, regardless of your position, if there's no 3-point line there because of your view of the entire court. So, I mean, I think that the corner would still be utilized, but it would be more of a spot for creation and dives to the basket. From a video game perspective, I can just see kids avoiding it.
Yeah.
To be completely honest with you, I can see kids avoiding the corner.
They're just going to park at the top of the key and kick it out to us, or run up and gun. I think that's even more so. I mean, that happens already with the current 3-point line.
I don't think it's frustrating now. You could see, you would think that, hey, look, you're taking part of the 3-point line away. Maybe it will be, the game will be more dynamic and more balanced. No, I don't think that would be the case. As long as a 3-point line exists at all, especially in the multiplayer space. In fact, I think it could even get more frustrating on the virtual hardwood, watching them just completely ignore those sides of the floor. And like you say, hanging out behind that, like that 3-point line that still exists.
Undoubtedly. But still an interesting scenario to consider all the same.
No, I think that's a great question. I love brainstorming stuff like that. Like, what ifs? Like, hey, what if we got rid of the three-point line? Or, you know, what if the three-point line was extended? By the way, it shouldn't be. I'm going to talk about this on the next podcast, the next Holding Court podcast. What would happen if they took away and ones? Or what happens if, you know, they change these rules and stuff? I love looking at stuff like that, thinking about it.
Can't beat a good what-if scenario.
Right, exactly.
So thank you once again for this week's questions. We hope you enjoyed us talking about them. Once again, please keep sending the questions in. We do have a couple to roll over till next week. You can send them to podcast@nba-live.com if you prefer to email. You can also hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, in the forum, on the comments section of the bulletins, on the front page of the NLSC. Basically, any way you can get in touch with us, send in those questions. We love to hear from our listeners, Derek.
No, absolutely. And we already have a couple questions that we can move into next week. So thank you for submitting those. Definitely love the mailbag.
So yes, thank you once again for the questions. And also thank you once again for the very kind comments on Facebook and elsewhere. We love to hear that people are tuning into the show and enjoying it. And of course, the show comes out every week on Sunday on the NLSC. We're also on all the podcatching apps and platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, to name just a few. Search NLSC Podcast, look for our logo, and that will be us. Or keep streaming it on the NLSC itself, as long as you're tuning in and enjoying the show each and every week, that is the main thing. But since that has brought us to the end of episode number 366, Derek, it's time for us to plug our socials.
Absolutely. You can listen to my podcast, Holding Court with D for Three, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Amazon Audible, CLNS Media, just all these different platforms. We'll be trying to release Holding Court with D for Three, episode 16 this week, as long as we get time to record it. You can find me on Twitter at D4384, YouTube D4Three, and over on the NLSC D4Three.
I'm on Twitter at AndrewNLSC. The NLSC is on Twitter and Facebook at the NLSC. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. YouTube is NBA Live Series Center. And of course, give a look to the NLSC itself, NBA-Live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week, so thank you for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.